This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Friday, June 11th, 2021. Yesterday, a fascinating session, what this market has really been all about in terms of looking through the heavy and high inflation data we got from the U.S. So we saw a CPI print, new record for the cycle, or new high for the cycle, I should say, and a new high in the core for the year-on-year, not seen since 1992 at 3.8% year-on-year. Actually got us a breakdown in one of our slides today, but obviously the market, interesting to see the market reaction, and that was the Treasuries initially sold off quite heavily before actually rallying and seeing yields running to new lows for the cycle. Just an amazing performance there. Market really expressing a willingness to either A, look through this inflationary data as transitory, buying the Fed's narrative, or B, there's so much liquidity afoot that everybody's snapping up Treasuries because of the just insane amounts of liquidity, the thing we've been talking about quite a bit of late. And I have more on that. But Peter, so of course, equities really liked, and especially the NASDAQ 100 really liked and appreciated those long-term yields coming down again. And we have the NASDAQ pushing up against that to huge 14,000 level once again.
Yeah, exactly. We have the NASDAQ at very close to 14,000. And you know, all the growth pockets, as you can see on slide four, our usual equity themes overview, they liked it. So semiconductors, bubble stocks, gaming, everything that smells of, high duration and which likes low interest rates. Also, next-gen medicine is still having a field day. But I took some time off this morning to actually look at this print because I was yelling and screaming yesterday to you, John, but also Ole about, you know, look at this months and months change in the core CPI. I mean, that's a proper regime shift, potentially. I mean, it's just so out of whack. I'm quite sad I didn't put in the chart. But even more importantly, I mean, this whole transitory inflation narrative, everyone seems to be buying it. But the matter of the fact that, and I know, I mean, the Fed has a lot of econometrics, metrics model looking at the data. And if you run a partial autocorrelation function on the months and months change in the core CPI, you get the chart, as you can see to the right. Again, we're still on slide four. And what you're basically seeing is every single line above above or below the blue lines there shows you a significant autocorrelation with, you know, a lag. So what you see here is actually that there is a 9 months of significant autocorrelation on a month and month. So when you have low inflation, it persists for almost a year. If you have a high month and month change, it persists for almost a year. And we know the next couple of months we'll continue to see high months and months. So I don't know what the market is smoking, but it's statistically, if the future is any guide, we're quite certain to have pretty elevated core inflation for at least the next 12 to 18 months, because the next couple of months we'll still see high. And I think longer term, I know Tia's probably having some doubts about her higher interest rate position, and I fully understand her. But I think the key thing here to understand is that a lot of what we're seeing right now is obviously reactions to short-term policy reaction that happened during the pandemic. But you shouldn't lose sight of what is the real medium-term driver of inflation, and that's the green transformation. The green transformation is a political decision to do good for the world. But to do good for the world, we're choosing energy solutions and other green solutions that, for the time being, until we have climbed some very, very steep learning curve and cost curves, is more expensive. So I don't see how the green transformation in an accelerated way will not continue to prop up these inflation rates. And I think that was my spiel on inflation for today.
Yeah. And if you just look at pick through what the drivers were here, I think it's interesting to see the official report from the BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics of the U.S. And I've put that up on slide three, highlighting, first of all, the energy stuff. So that was, of course, the key drivers at the end of last year and into April. Or sorry, through March, I should say. You can see some incredible month-on-month rises there, because obviously basic fossil fuel oil prices, fossil fuel prices were rising very rapidly, and the year-on-year figures are just incredible there. And we know that's going to fade unless oil is about to lurch up to the $120 a barrel. So, you know, 50%+ on some of those categories there year on year. Although the last 2 months are actually providing easing pressures, that means other factors had to pick up the slack. And those other factors have especially been on the used cars and trucks. And this is in part linked to an unwise production shutdown cycle or slowdown cycle in response to the pandemic, but then also all the semiconductor production that has been disrupted, and now they can't even produce what they want to produce. So this is fed through to used car prices. And if you were to take your autocorrelation argument and the idea that semiconductors may not get back to normal until well into next year, that category could continue to rise. But I would say it's going to maybe have a hard time rising at the rate of 7.3% month on month, like we saw, and then the 10% in April. So maybe that's what where especially something like used cars and trucks apparently contributing a third of the month on month rise in that core inflation rise of 0.7%. You know, that's where people are seeing some of the transitoriness, but you know, as you said, this could persist for a while. And transportation services, another one, so airfare, I think that includes airfare, up at 11.2% year on year. A lot of opening up related figures there. And then of course we have to look at the market reaction in the Treasury. So on the top, on the right, on slide 3, I'm just showing the T-note futures. So you see that initial sell-off very rapidly rejected, and we actually closed at new highs, so new lows in yield. And another data item that came out yesterday. And it was actually it was based on data that's up to the 9th. So yesterday was the 10th, was up to the 9th. The U.S. Treasury general account reduced by almost $140 billion in 1 week, all the way down to $674 billion. We're getting well on our way there towards that sub $500 billion level that we've talked about as sort of one of the next key tests for whether this liquidity situation starts to reverse a bit once that process of unwinding that account is complete. But Ola, I guess in your space, it was a fairly limited reaction, a little bit of excitement in precious metals on what the treasury market did. But we have very different things going on elsewhere in the world and the commodity focus, that's in China.
Indeed, John. Take gold and silver first, because they are challenging resistance this Friday morning. If you can take a look at slide 7, we can see gold, even though we had a correction, it's been quite shallow. We have not at any point during this correction closed below the 21-day moving average, so the momentum is still there. But now we basically need to see whether it's got enough juice left in the tank to take out this band of resistance all the way up to 1916. So that will probably be the focus today. But you are right, the drop in yields, and I suppose especially the drop in real yields, which suddenly moved back down to like something like negative 94 basis points, really also helped turn the market around yesterday. So potentially interesting day ahead into the weekend. But you're also right, we've seen this whole effort by China over the past months to curb commodity prices, reduce speculation. We saw the factory output costs or input costs basically hitting a decade high early in the week, with PPI coming out very strongly. The next step they have introduced is basically offering to release industrial metals from state reserves towards end users, and that was announced when it came out over the past day or so, and something like copper, aluminium, zinc are all on offer, and they're basically going to do that as in monthly installments through the end of the year. So far, the impact on the market has been, we haven't really seen any additional impacts in terms of lower prices. If you can see, you can see on slide 8 here, the copper price has really been knocking its head against very firm support here in the low 440s on high grade. And today we're trading back above 450. So clearly the room for maneuver is dwindling. And the question is really, with those initiatives from China, whether copper has got enough strength at this point to break higher, breaking that downtrend, or whether we are seeing a bit longer period here of consolidation. But I absolutely agree with Peter. The green transformation will provide the underlying support that eventually could see these prices move higher.
And another, to underline that, just from a technical point of view, when you see these incredible advances in a commodity, there's so many commodity market cycles where incredible advances sort of climax and they reverse the price action almost symmetrically with what it looked like on the way up, and sometimes even more climactically. And just the fact that it sticks, like you're saying, sticking around here, it underlines the strength of the longer term trend when you see price action like that, at least in my mind.
Absolutely.
And, yeah. And then you've got we had quite a drawdown in the grains, or at least in corn in May, I'm seeing on your chart on slide nine. But we've pushed back higher there. Are there some concerns about on the supply side?
Well, it's been, we've had a very, very glorious hot weather in Northern Europe this past couple of weeks. The same goes for the US. And even though we're well into the growing season now, and so far, once again, we are seeing weather worries basically attracting a lot of headlines, a lot of attention, because stocks are so low after this massive surge in demand over the past year that we simply need a strong crop season. And if weather is playing up, then we have an issue. But yesterday was the monthly Rusty report, and I put a small insert here on slide nine, just the results. And you can see the main change was a bigger than expected drop in corn stocks, basically saying due to a very strong demand for biofuel, again, green transformation, and export demand, especially towards China, where soybeans are starting to see a little bit of a bias strike. Soy meal and oil and meal demand seems to have started to have a bit of a negative, or be negatively impacted by the current strong prices. So it's a bit of a mixed field, but the one that's attracting most of the bullish attention right now continues to be corn.
Okay, and then in FX, we just continue to see mild reactions to nearly everything. I would just pull out on slide six the overview of the G10 trends, that it's interesting to see the Swedish krona and the Swiss franc picking up here. Got a little chart there, the Euro Swiss. It's working down into levels where it's arguably we've erased that entire breakout move from earlier this year if we continue lower. And part of that being driven by these very low interest rates that we're seeing at the moment. I think that Euro Swiss downtrend probably has limited prospects. It coming up against a very key level, the 200-day moving average. You can see that's been influential as recently as back in especially November of last year, around the announcement of the vaccine, which is where that spike in November came from upwards. So that's an interesting one. And even more interesting has been EM, where most of the action has been lately in the Forex space. So Russian Central Bank, if you go to slide five, to meet today, and the tilt in the expectations has moved almost unanimously towards a 50 basis point move. It was split as recently as just a few days ago on whether they would move that much. Inflation has risen higher than expected. It's running at 6% year on year. So they want to get the rate back up towards more neutral and not negative real yields. And we have a breakdown in a dollar ruble. So the question will be, based on what is almost certain to be a 50 basis point move today, whether it's already in the price here and where the guidance can support this move lower. I don't see why not if oil is well supported and if they're just trying to bolster the idea that they're being defensive on the risk of especially food price inflation to keep the purchasing power of the ruble strong. Okay, let's shift gears a little bit here, to say the least. Pia, there's an interesting story, and we've talked about the story ongoing, the idea that Intel is not the idea, but the process by which they're looking to source back a lot of the semiconductor production back into the U.S. And you've got some thoughts on what Intel is signaling here with this potential acquisition.
Yeah, we the U.S. have highlighted semiconductors as a national security industry for some time now. It happened under the Trump administration, and it had really accelerated it further, I would say, under the Biden administration. And there are a lot of concrete plans in the U.S. to bring back semiconductor manufacturing to the U.S. And it's coinciding with Intel's recent decision by their new CEO, Gelsinger, to adopt this new foundry strategy, which has been pivotal to the success of TSMC. And part of the foundry strategy is that you can come with your own chip designs, and then you can basically get Intel to manufacture them, and they will still do their own various chips for different purposes. And the news were out yesterday was out that they're looking to acquire Sci-5, California-based chip designer company with something called RISC-V architecture, which is basically this company's attempt to create some open source standards within semiconductors and chip designs. So I think this is just a further indication that Intel is willing to put money behind not only expanding capacity, which is very costly, but also do acquisitions, and in this case, adding some technology and business that they don't have in internally. But as you can see here on this 5-year slide, I mean, Intel have been walking in a desert for 4 years with very, very high volatility from one quarter to the next. So it's I think the equity market still wants, you know, Intel to move into a position where it's more stable on the outlook, and there is a more clear high growth path than what we have experienced over the past 4 years, where they have really been losing some terrain to some of their competitors.
All right, now turning over to a very different page, we put together a Saxo Euro 2020 football, a European Championship football fantasy league on the UEFA website, and we created a team, a Saxo Strats team. Stein Jakobsen, our CIO, selling our process pretty hard there in the article. You can see on slide 11. I think there's an awful lot of randomness in how these fantasy leagues shape up, but it's an awful lot of fun. We've had a ton of people coming in and joining the league. You can see that on slide 11. If you're interested in this kind of thing, you can of course create your league on the UEFA with the app, and it looks like you've put in that's what the app is called, the Euro 2020 Fantasy Football app. It's a dedicated app. It's a bit hard to find on the website, I must admit. I was using a desktop browser. And then we have our league code. You can see on the bottom right there. And unfortunately, I think the first, it's 4 and an O, not a 0. But just watch out for that. Make sure you copy and paste from the article you can see there on analysis.sax. So anything to add, Peter? I think it was safe to say chiefly yours and Stain's football expertise that went into putting together the squad here.
Yeah, I had my own personal pick. There was only one I wanted to have on our team, and that was the young Italian goalkeeper Donnarumma, which is a goalkeeper for AC Milan. I think he's moving to Paris Saint-Germain for the next season, but he's a huge talent, potentially going to be the best goalkeeper in the world in the coming years. I'm really looking forward to watching. But otherwise, we have per Steen's philosophy, we've tried to implement the Moneyball tactic. So we've tried to find some names in between where you can, here and there in the different areas of the field, where you can actually get some decent quality for not so much money. So that's also a little bit part of the game. And I should say that over the coming weeks, we will put out some pieces on the various matches which we'll call Footonomics, where we Steam will do some commenting on the various countries. So, for instance, the opening match tonight in Rome on the old Olympic Stadium, Steam will obviously be talking a little bit about Italy and Turkey. And I have selected the biggest companies from each team, except for North Macedonia. Apparently, they don't even have a public equity market. So that's a different story. So I will go through the different the two companies from the biggest company from Turkey and Italy, and we'll do so for some of the matches, and that will be spit out on analysis.sax. So this is just all fun and games.
Yes, fun and games indeed. It is a lot of fun. I put together a squad, and I put the name in code so nobody knew which one was mine, because I don't want to be embarrassed. I don't want to be embarrassed when I'm in last place towards the end.
You have to tell me the name, John.
I'll tell you later, just between you and me. Okay. Hey, Ole, you wanted to mention something on oil yesterday. There was apparently a flub with a headline that got the market turned around the wrong way at some point that was then quickly erased.
Yeah, we've seen this quite decent, strong rally in oil over the past couple of weeks. It's settled down now around the $70 level in WTI, potentially just indicating that most of the pickup in Western Hemisphere demand has been priced into the States. But what we saw yesterday was just a slight warning of what can happen with Iran. The algorithms, which clearly controls quite a high percentage of daily volumes in these futures markets, they basically misread the headline saying that the U.S. had removed sanctions, not on Iran, but on an Iranian person. And that headline just briefly took oil down by more than 2%. It traded more than 130 million barrels of crude. That will clearly have taken out quite a few recently established longs and left people a little bit bruised. And that may also just slow the potential upside. But just highlights how some of these how these trading mechanisms, they're very headline driven, and if they get the headline wrong, then things happens.
All right, human intelligence versus artificial. So that takes us to the macro calendar, and actually briefly I wanted to mention, I should have at the top of the show, but we have I dropped a yesterday's webinar the audio from it into our podcast feed. So if you're interested in a longer form discussion of FX topics, and I do apologize if any of you have already accessed that presentation because or accessed that podcast because I messed up the link to the slides. That has now been corrected, so the slide link works. You can also go to webinars.saxo and look for the original presentation where you have that. It's all combined in the video and audio together as I go through the slides. But up to you. Just want to point out that it's there if you are interested. Okay, macro calendar today. Again, the Russian Central Bank decision, interesting there. On the University of Michigan sentiment, I'm mostly curious about the inflation expectations, especially the longer-term ones. The 5 to 10 year expectations, which reached up to 3%. And that's kind of a major sort of range high going back quite a number of years. So, are inflation expectations becoming dislodged from their longer term range will be interesting in the months to come. We have this G7 meeting watching on the geopolitical front there for especially statements on China and specifically the Taiwan Strait, et cetera, and what the eventual Chinese response will be. Again, the sense of, is there some sort of bloc or solidarity developing on a stance across from China with this G7 meeting? Next week, I just want to pull out a couple of things here. Okay, the May retail sales, I think quite interesting because we have the fading stimmy check versus the opening up and people spending out of their savings argument. Where is the balance there? So we saw the huge 10.7% month-on-month surge in March on stimulus checks. April was flat. May is expected very slightly down, minus 0.4%, but could it be a bigger miss on the downside, et cetera? That's the interesting point there ahead of the Wednesday FOMC. I think there's strong risk that they loosen up their language and become a little bit more two-way in their guidance. I think they may have been quite surprised at how well the market took their very, very cautious tease of an eventual taper in recent weeks, Clarida and others, bringing up the idea of talking one day about talking about tapering, and the market largely shrugged it off. So I think they may feel a bit emboldened with the current market's backdrop to up that rhetoric. Let's see how the market absorbs it. I think this is one of the last event risks that decides whether we're going to have to settle in for a sort of a long, hot, range-bound summer, at least in terms of a risk at volatility. It could be actually quite good for equities, of course, but that's interesting there. Brazil, they're meeting on Wednesday as well. They're expected to hike rates 75 basis points. Turkey, a key EM name, especially after Erdogan's fresh signs of wanting to take the rate lower and the recent try sell-off before it's tried to rally here. So quite a bit going on next week, actually, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. For now, have a great weekend. Stay safe out there, and we'll be back, of course, next week with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.